morning, everybody. It's good to be with you guys today. As you just heard read from Romans 4, we're obviously going to be continuing our sermon series today in the book of Romans. Scott opened us up in chapter 4 last week, looking at verses 1 to 8. We're continuing this series of looking at what does it mean to be made right with God? Who are a people who are ungodly and far from God be made right with a holy God? We've seen kind of throughout this that we know we need to be right because each of us, in our own ways, millions of different ways, we live our lives trying to justify ourselves. We live our lives trying to prove that I am okay. I really am okay. Even a person who would claim to be an atheist or an agnostic who doesn't know if there is a God or not, they live their lives trying to find a righteousness, a validation, a justification for who they are as a human. And so today, in our passage, Paul's going to throw some more light for us on this topic of being justified, of being made right. And he's going to get us to ask, what qualified Abraham to be righteous? So if you're anything like me, you often struggle with the words righteousness and justification. It's kind of hard to get our minds wrapped around what those terms mean. But I'm sure all of you are probably familiar with the concept of qualification. What does it mean to qualify for something? What's interesting is our entire lives are built around qualification. What qualifications do you have? So think about if you go to school, graduate high school, it's a qualification. Your GPA is a qualification of what you've done. If you go to college and get an undergrad or a graduate degree or a PhD, that's a qualification. Think about your jobs. Your jobs are built on you having the right qualifications. Does that make sense? Even think about sports, music, hobbies. Normally some kind of training or certification is required to get to be at a certain level. Maybe you deal with software a lot. You have to get a lot of training. Maybe you're an engineer at the shipyard. Well, what code are you in or what branch are you in? What certifications do you have? Are you nuclear, non-nuclear? Maybe if you're in the military, a lot of people in our area are in the military, what rank are you? What courses have you passed? That's your qualification that you can do that job. But then we also have other qualifications. Are you a hard worker? Are you a good mom? Are you a good dad? Our world, our lives are built on what are you qualified for? And again, that's not even necessarily a bad thing. That's just how our world works. We live and die by our qualifications. And what's interesting, it's not just our lives. The stories that we love, your favorite movie, book, play, film, is built around usually a character or a hero having to get a qualification for something. Think about Moana. Does she have what it takes to lead her people? Is she qualified to do that? She has to go on this journey to prove that. Think about your favorite love story. One person is usually trying to fight to win, to prove that they're worth, that they're qualified for their lover's affection. Think about one of my personal favorites, the Rocky series. In every single one, Rocky is trying to prove that he has what it takes to go the distance, to win, to defend his title, that he's qualified to do that. And we love these stories because we see ourselves in them, that we too are fighting for a qualification. And so for our passage today, Paul is going to get us to start to think, what did Abraham have that qualified him? And even if you look down at the passage that Melissa read, what in there did Abraham have that qualified him to be right with God? This is where the scandal of this passage really starts to come out. That Abraham was given the job, the promotion, the rank, the raise, without doing a thing. So as we look at this passage, here's one main question that we're going to come back to a lot as we look at this passage. What would change in your life if you believed that God had already qualified you to be in his family? What would change in your life if you believe that God has already qualified you to be in his family? So we're going to look at this text, and then we're going to come back to this question at the end. But let's pray right now as we start. Jesus, we do thank you that you are here with us by your Spirit, and we just ask for your help right now. I ask that you would give us humility to think critically even about our own hearts and lives. Pray, Spirit, that you would help us connect this passage and the reality of justification by faith to our lives. I pray for those of us here who already just feel, I know I don't qualify, or I know I'm far. I pray you would help us to see the beauty of our qualification in Jesus. And I pray for those of us that do feel we are qualified, Jesus, that you would help us see that we only are qualified because of you. So we ask for your help now as we look at this passage. Amen. All right, so last week, again, Scott started us in Romans 4. He talked about how most of our problems in our Christian life come from lack of belief, deep belief in justification, and being able to see how that connects to our lives. And I think that's something that a lot of us struggle with is, okay, so justification, I'm made right with God. How does that connect to my anger or my depression or the fact that I hate my job? How does that connect? And it's interesting because, again, as we've continued to see, our world is full of work and reward and recognition. And what happens is then we expect that from God. We turn our relationship with God into a debtor's relationship. But as Scott told us last week, God doesn't justify the godly. As simple as that is, that's pretty profound. He justifies the ungodly. So now in this section, verses 9 to 12, Paul is going to say, okay, so he justifies the ungodly, but who are those people who gets it? Do you just have to be ungodly to get it? Is it just for those who have the mark of circumcision, the Jewish people, which is what was going on in Paul's day? There were certain people who had a qualification and certain people who didn't. And both camp thought they were right. So Paul is going to show us the life of Abraham and actually see who really qualifies, those with or without the qualification. And again, like, we're really far removed from Rome 2,000 years ago. But for the people in that church, the people who had become Christians who were living in this pagan city of Rome, and then these Jews were coming in who were saying, you had to be circumcised. This is the mark. This is the qualification. This was a really big deal. And if you think about it, what items do we make a qualification in our own lives for other people? And we're going to come back to that at the end. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a quick walkthrough of these verses, just a couple minutes. We're going to ask how and why does qualification come. We're going to just be doing that and looking at these four verses. And then we're going to look at point two, that if we're qualified, what changes? And that's when we're going to come back to that question. If we really believed we were qualified, what would change? So let's jump into point one, how and why qualification comes. Look with me at verses 9 and 10. Paul says in verse 9, who gets this blessing of justification? Is it for the people who just have the physical proof? Is it just for the people with the right qualification? And then, verse 10, he asks how. And the word here is actually saying, in what way? In what way was Abraham proven to be someone righteous? What benchmark, what qualification did he have? And Paul says in verse 10, on the contrary to what you might think, Abraham was made righteous before he had the qualification for it, before he had the proof of it. And so as you begin to think through that, that verse is actually one of the most earth-shattering realities that there could ever be. It was not after he had the proof. It was before he even had the proof. He was already declared to be righteous. This verse, it wasn't after, it was before. It's like, okay, what's the big deal? That shows that God's way of working is completely counter to how our brains, to how our world works. God's grace is a completely foreign reality to how we think and operate. Qualification comes as we realize the only thing that qualifies me for grace is recognizing my profound need of it. And think about it. Paul even, if you look at the verses, Paul even says, was it after or was it before? He really wants us to see this point. He doesn't just make the statement. He asks the question, was it after or was it before? And then what does he say? It wasn't after. It was before. But why? Look at verses 11 and 12. Why does qualification come? Paul goes on to explain that Abraham was made right with God before he had done any work, before he had undergone the ordeal of circumcision, which just shows that the actual physical mark of circumcision was simply a sign of what was already true before. When Abraham received the mark of circumcision as the proof, yet reality was already there. It was already true of him. And so this is where, in verses 11 and 12, this goes way beyond just the Jew-Gentile debate in Rome. This is where this actually already drops in on us right here, those of us here in Chesapeake, Virginia, sitting in a building in Deep Creek. The reason Paul says Abraham was given the sign was to prove that righteousness wasn't just for the Jew, or just for the Gentile. It wasn't just for the one with the right background. Rather, Abraham himself stands as evidence that yes, I was righteous before. And yes, this sign is simply proof of what I already had before. Yes, those with circumcision are God's people, and those without are also God's people. And it's interesting that because we often think of ourselves as if we're the Jews. We're the ones who are God's people, and then we're supposed to go out to the world and bring the good news to those that have never heard the story. We're the Gentiles. We're the ones who were far from God's family, far from his people, outside of his story, and we got brought in. We were the Gentiles. So, to wrap up looking at these verses, in verses 11 and 12, there's two categories of people. Abraham's the father of all who believe without being circumcised, and they are counted as righteous. Secondly, in verse 12, he is the father of the circumcised, but not simply those who have the right background, but those who actually follow in his faith, in the footsteps of faith, those who are really believing, I know why I'm righteous. It's not because I have some physical qualification. So let's get back to that question we asked at the beginning, though. What would change in your life if you really believed that that was true? If you really believe that you are already qualified, like right now, what would change? So we're going to look at point two. What changes if we are qualified? Or another way to think of it, how does justification by faith impact the everyday areas of our lives? I want us to look at three categories, specific areas of our lives: our feelings, our performance, and our relationships. So let's start with feelings. For many of us, we often relate and have a perception of God based on how we feel. How am I feeling today? Is this a good day or a bad day? Do you ever just wake up and just feel bad? This is just going to be a bad one. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, this day already sucks, and I'm laying in bed. It hasn't even started. Well, if that's you, and it's often me, this passage in verse 10 specifically is a huge welcome grace. God doesn't relate to you if you get your feelings in order. His perception of you hasn't changed if you feel, man, this day is going to be a doozy. Rather, he's already qualified you regardless of how you feel today. Your standing before God isn't determined by if it's going to be a good day or a bad day in your mind. It was not after, it was before. It was before Abraham had even done anything. God already said, "You're mine. I give you my love." So the beauty of our justification by faith means that since Jesus brings us into his family and into the story out of his love for us, that means even on your worst day, the day that you feel so dead to the world, the days that you feel so cold and dead towards God, and obviously towards other people as well, that literally nothing changes in your relationship with God. Think about that. Your worst day, he's still seeing you the same. You feel so cold, so dead, so far away from God. I don't even know if I have faith in God anymore. He still sees you the same. Justification by faith is the absolute guarantee that God is forever for you, whether you feel that or not. So if you deeply believe that, what would change on those hard days, the days of depression, the days of shame, the days of guilt, the days of questioning, God, are you even there? Do I even believe there is a God right now? If Jesus has already declared you to be right and in his family, that means that those hard and dark days don't define you. They're a shadow reality of the true reality you've already been brought into. So justification by faith, our qualification because of faith in Jesus, speaks to our feelings because it orients us back. This is what's actually true. This shadow reality of my bad feelings does not need to define me today. But it also speaks to our performance, not just to our feelings, but also performance. What would change in your life if you believe God has already qualified you, regardless of how you feel your performance has been lately? Are you winning at life? This is here a little bit different. We just talked about feelings, but now let's talk about, maybe this is different people, maybe you fit in both of these, those who are the performers, those who have to finish, accomplish, succeed, win at everything. Those who have their list of to-dos, if you don't finish it, fail. Think of the questions that regularly are going through our heads. How have I been performing? Have I been a good spouse? Have I struggled with sin? Am I winning in my battles with sin? How am I doing with sexual temptation? Have I been winning or failing? Based on whatever metric you think is the right one. How am I doing on my job? Do my coworkers love and accept me and respect me? Or am I kind of on the outs at work? How is my depression? Am I fighting it or am I just like, man, I've given up? Am I being an angry parent? Again, these aren't bad questions. These are the questions we ask ourselves when it comes to our performance. Am I working hard enough at life? Am I doing enough to get ahead? How am I doing with my spiritual disciplines? Am I reading my Bible enough? Am I praying enough? Am I fasting enough or at all? Am I being faithful on mission? Am I doing a really good job of being connected to my MC, or am I not doing too hot there? Am I being a good friend, good son, good daughter? The list could go on. And again, it's not bad to ask ourselves these. These are good questions to ask. But what happens, though, if whatever area you choose to evaluate yourself in, what happens if you're failing there? Whatever arena you choose to ask those questions around, we use our performance as a qualifier. This either delivers me before God or it damns me before God, we think. And if you think you're failing, if you're someone right now who says my performance has just been really bad, you're probably living in a lot of shame, fear, guilt. We live as if justification has been revoked when we fail. We say that if this, whatever it is in place, then I'm good with God. And again, this often happens subtly because it doesn't, you don't really realize it until you really see, oh wow, I really, really blew this. So what do you do when you realize you can't keep it all together? How does justification by faith, our qualification because of Jesus, actually speak into our failed performance? Well, it would actually say that those moments when you think you failed, those are the moments that you actually see what your true standing is really based on. In those moments of failing, we see, wow, I really blew it. But justification by faith says, my true performance is locked into Jesus. He is my true performance. And the reality is you often don't realize that until you've really failed. And you really can't do it anymore. It's then you see, oh my gosh, I have been living as if my relationship with God depended on my ability to maintain all of these things. It's exhausting. It's when you failed, you realize performance is needed, but it's somebody else's performance on my behalf. Jesus's performance is what earned you a seat at the table. He performed for you. And when we begin to see that, we realize, wow, I've failed, I've blown it. But nothing's changed. God doesn't view me any differently now because he sees me in Jesus. Verse 10 again shows us that Abraham was justified before he had done anything, before he had performed. And so when we fail, we realize that, wow, I was thinking that I was qualified based on the fact that I was reading my Bible a lot, or I'm a good parent, or I'm doing really good at my job. We often live as if, okay, if I'm doing good at this, then I'm good with God. But if we have already been justified, then we can fight the temptation to also live in the fear, guilt, shame when you failed. Because again, as we've seen, God doesn't treat me as if my sins are gone. Now, he also treats me as if I've always done perfectly. This is the reality of double imputation. That's the big theological term, that my sins have been taken and Jesus' record has been given to me. Think about this. And then we're going to look at the other side of this. So does this mean that we just sin? Okay, well, my performance doesn't matter. Do whatever you want. Party. No, Paul's going to talk about that. It doesn't mean that. But think about this. When you failed, does God still want to be with you when you don't measure up? When you don't measure up, does God still want to be with you? Justification by faith would say the answer is an irrevocable, eternal, resounding, absolutely. Nothing has changed when it comes to his love for you. So, again, though, does this just give license to do whatever we want? Oh, well, performance doesn't matter. I'm just going to live in sin. No, it doesn't. Paul's going to talk about this really soon. Because the reality is, realizing that my performance, however, whether a good parent, good worker, whatever that is for you, you actually, when you realize you're already justified, you actually find a whole new motivation out of which to obey. A whole new field of motivations comes to be. When you realize, wow, I probably was doing all of those things out of fear or out of shame or out of guilt. And now when I realize my status is secure, wow, I want to keep doing all of those things because I love God. Not because he's going to whack me if I don't. He already whacked Jesus for my sin. So now he treats me as if I've never done any sin. You see the difference there? It doesn't say, oh, go sin, do whatever you want. No, it actually changes why we even perform and do what we do. So I would encourage you just on this point before we move on to this next part, just to think about that. Why do I obey? And again, you usually find that when you think you failed. But there's another side to this performance piece that I wasn't sure to add or not, but I decided to, of some of us live our life constantly feeling disqualified. Let me explain what I mean here. We don't need to wait to fail to feel disqualified, because we live, maybe you live, as if you're already disqualified. I think the psychological world might call this self-destructive behavior. This would be those of you who would say, if you really knew me, you wouldn't love me. If you really knew who I am, what I've done, I already know you wouldn't accept me. I think some of us probably really struggle on this point. This space of feeling, I'm already disqualified. I don't need to fail. I've already done that. I'm already too far gone, maybe. Again, but if most of our problems in life come from the fact that we're not really believing we're justified, how does that connect to this area? I think for many of us, the reason we act this way is because we're afraid. We are afraid that in some way we will be shown to be a sham. We are afraid that if God or others saw us for who we really are, then we'll be shown to be a fraud. So what do? We scour our past history. We scour our souls. We find all these ways. See, I couldn't be loved because of this. I couldn't be loved because of this. I couldn't be loved because of this. I'm already disqualified. Maybe it's something that happened to you in your past. Maybe it's something you did in your past. And now you are living in constant, daily shame, fear, guilt over that thing. Again, but what's happening? No one could love me because of this. What is this? This is a qualification. It's the opposite of a qualification in some ways, but it's still a qualification. Because I've done this, disqualified. Because of this in my past, because of how I struggle, I'm unlovable. I'm unacceptable. And what do? We isolate. We create spaces of our life that no one can get into. We create an environment in our friendships that you can only get so close, and then don't go there with me. And again, for many of us, it's fear that drives this, fear of being fully known. So how does justification by faith speak into this area of life? Again, verse 10, Abraham was counted as right. He was seen as perfect without having done anything. His acceptance didn't hinge on if he had or hadn't done anything. He was already seen as righteous. God had already said to you, I love you because of who I am, not because of what you're going to do or not do. This shows us that these things that we hate most about our lives, these areas that we disqualify ourselves, these are actually the spaces that God is going to use to drive his grace and goodness deeper and deeper into your souls. The areas that you think no one, including God, could ever love me because of this, these are the areas that God is already priming to show his grace to you there. To show his grace to you that, no, you might think this disqualifies you, but look at the lengths I went to bring you in. Do you think this thing is going to stop me from showing you love? Both from God himself, but then also from his people? And getting to that place where you can believe that, I'm just going to say, it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, maybe it will. That would be amazing. If you're struggling with this area of disqualification, maybe the Spirit will just open your eyes to see that. But this actually, I believe, mostly happens through kind of this long obedience, this faithfulness of continuing to press into Jesus, continuing to press into the good news of justification, continuing to press into community, and opening your life to people and seeing them show you the goodness of Jesus. It comes, as we always say, as we increasingly come to believe this more and more. Believe it in deeper and deeper ways. See it connect to different pockets of your life and soul. And as you come to see that, when those waves of fear, guilt, shame, doubt come, you're actually going to have a rock to stand on and realize, I don't need to disqualify myself anymore. Again, I just want to again emphasize, this is not just some individual rogue Christian mentality. This is what we do in our life together, of developing friendship, developing intimacy with people, and then letting them see and bring them into these pockets of life that you really wrestle in. That is one of the primary ways Jesus shows us the lengths and depths of his love, is through his people giving us that grace. So let's close by looking at our relationships with other people. Verses 9 to 12 shows that justification by faith is the ultimate leveler. It makes the playing field level. Since Abraham is the father of the circumcised and the uncircumcised, think all people, that means that everyone is a brother and sister. This is what creates the universal family of God. This is what destroys racism or discrimination. Justification by faith actually is what does that. But in real life, again, not to minimize that, like that sounds really good, but in real life, how do we live in relationship with other people? We live by qualifications. I will only be your friend if. If you do this to me and it offends me, I will not relate to you in whatever sort of way that is for you. This is how we pick and choose who we're friends with. Think about it. If you have too many problems, or if you act like this, or if you do this, qualifications. We add qualifications to who we will relate to. For Paul, in his context, again, it was, were you circumcised or were you uncircumcised? Did you have the proof or do you not? Do you have the qualification or do you not? And if you don't, they refuse friendship with each other. So think about it. This is where hopefully the Spirit will be helping you do this. What qualifications do you add to your relationships with people? Maybe you don't like lazy people or arrogant people, people who talk too much. Let's get a little more real. What about people who are just weird? Just, they're a little too quirky, a little too out there for me. What about people who just annoy the crap out of you? I mean, seriously, like, I cannot stand them. What about people who you think are kind of dirty? I mean, seriously, like, people who are like, oh, they're kind of a dirty person. A couple weeks ago, Jana told me this story about a time she was taking, she's a nanny for a little boy and a little girl, and the little girl, who's almost three, is in gymnastics. So once a week, Janet takes her to these gymnastic lessons, and all the moms are there with their little girls who are running around, jumping on trampolines, and all the moms kind of got to know each other, and so Janet does this every week, and she noticed that one of the moms one day just smelled really bad, like really bad BO. Like, you could smell it without having to stand next to her. And as Jana told me the story, she said it was really interesting because this circle formed around the mom. And wherever she moved, everyone would move. And if they moved over here, they were made sure they were nowhere near her. And so Jana came home and told me the story, and we just kind of began to think, like, why would that woman smell like that? Maybe she just doesn't have good hygiene. Maybe she was running around with kids all day and just didn't have time to get home and maybe re-shower if she needed to before the gymnastics lesson. Maybe she's someone who doesn't have access to a shower. Maybe somebody's paying for her and her daughter to come and get these lessons? Like, you know, we just began to realize, like, there's probably a lot of reasons, maybe even other than she just doesn't have good hygiene. Like, there's probably a good reason here. So we just began to think, okay, maybe instead of judging this woman right away, we could actually put aside our qualification of must smell good to talk to her. It's interesting, later on, Jana found out, like, her husband had been deployed forever, and life was really difficult for them, and Jana, like, began to actually find out more about her story and actually began to talk to her and get to know her a little bit. And so this is a weird example, I know, but what's interesting is, don't we do the same thing, though? Who are the people that you make a wide circle around because of their smell, whatever that smell might be, whatever qualification it might be, that you add so now you avoid these people? Maybe it's people who don't treat you fairly. Maybe it's people who treat you like you're garbage, and so you think, two can play at this. I can treat you like garbage too, I'm just gonna ignore you now. Who will you forgive, and who won't you forgive? Who are the people that are too far? It's interesting, we do this with so many things. Who are the people who are too smart for you? You know what, they're too smart, I can't hang with them. And who are the people who are too unintelligent? And you're like, ah, I don't wanna hang out with them either. Who's unworthy of your love? Who's unworthy of your friendship? What about people of different sexual orientation that you know? People who choose a different lifestyle sexually than you. Do you ignore them? Do you avoid them? What about people who make more or make less? Again, the list could go on of qualifications we add. And the reality, just so you know, in case you didn't, everyone else is doing the same thing to you. And maybe you know it, maybe you don't, but it's exhausting either way. But what if we, by the Spirit, become a community freed to live above qualifications for people? Freed to live above qualification of who we'll associate with and who we won't. Since we know our Father has not only qualified us, but actually forgiven us for the wrong qualifications we put on other people. That's amazing. We would actually then become a community that loves the marginalized, that really can love the victim, that can really love the one who's downtrodden. And again, how does this happen? It only happens as we realize that our justification by faith means that we have all of the qualification that we will ever need. Jesus in justification gives us more than simple forgiveness. He gives us a way to relate to God as if we'd never even sinned. So, to close now, what changes in your life if that's true? This is where I think right now, as we prepare to close and sing together, I think we can end right now in repentance and in celebration hand in hand. We can end in repentance by asking, man, what qualifications do I add to people all the time? Jesus, help me turn from that and realize that I don't need to do that because I have already been qualified. So I can extend that love and qualification to other people. So not just repentance, but also celebration. That we see our own qualification comes completely outside of us from someone who performed on our behalf. So repentance and celebration is how we can end. So seeing that maybe we could end right now, actually just taking a couple minutes, just maybe for like a minute or two, maybe just some silent prayer and reflection, and the band can come up, and then I'll close us in prayer in just a couple minutes. But maybe we can just take a couple minutes right now and just quietly reflect and pray in our own hearts.